Well, Election Day is a week from tomorrow, and we look at the challenges of holding an election amidst a global pandemic. There have been five separate lawsuits seeking to change the way the state of Wisconsin will hold its election next Tuesday. On Friday, the governor called on the legislature to make next Tuesday an all-absentee ballot election. Our guest is right in the middle of all of this crucial debate, weighing the need for public safety against the need for a functional representative democracy. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn, filling in for Kate Archer Kent, and this is your State Capitol Report. If you've got questions about our elections and the logistics of Election Day, well, you are not alone. You are also in the best place to get answers this morning at 1-800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Megan Wolf is our guest. She is the administrator of the Wisconsin Elections Commission. And Megan, let's begin with the plans for next Tuesday. As of this morning, as they now stand, what are the plans for Wisconsin spring elections?
Great. Well, good morning, and thanks for having me. So as the election currently stands, we're looking ahead to having an election next Tuesday. Our clerks in each of our 1,850 jurisdictions, so each city, town, and village, are busy making preparations to adjust their polling places to ensure that they're set up in accordance to health guidance, to make sure that they're structuring it in a way that can help both voters and poll workers operate safely if they do need to go to the polls. That being said, we are encouraging everybody to make sure that they get their absentee ballot. There's still plenty of time for voters to get their absentee ballot. And as a matter of fact, you can still even register to vote online today if you still need to do that, or if you still need to change your name or address.
So, Megan, there is still time to register to vote. That registration deadline has been extended to today. So even if you wanted to register to vote in the spring elections next Tuesday, still time to do that. And what's the best way to go about it?
Sure. So if you need to get registered to vote, or if you'd like to request an absentee ballot, the best way to do it is to go to myvote.wi.gov. And again, if you need to update your name or update your address, you can click on register to vote. If you're a first-time Wisconsin voter, you can go there too. You can complete your information as long as you have address and name and date of birth information that matches the DMV. You'll be able to get registered to vote online. If you're already registered, or once you get registered, then you can just click on vote absentee. I think the easiest way to do it is to go on your mobile phone. It'll walk you right through the requesting an absentee process. It only takes a couple of clicks. And if you don't already have a photo ID on file, if you haven't voted by mail before, it's going to ask you to take a picture of your photo ID on your phone, and then it'll upload it right to the system. It'll send it to, and they'll send you your ballot so that you can vote by mail for the April 7th election.
That website again is myvote.wi.gov, myvote.wi.gov. Megan Wolf, administrator of the Wisconsin Elections Commission. And Megan, since we're talking about uploading that photo ID, it occurs to me that the clerks for both Milwaukee and Dane County have advised voters they don't have to provide a photo ID when voting absentee. Now, this is one of those lawsuits, evidently. The Republican Party of Wisconsin has asked the state Supreme Court to intervene and require an ID to cast a ballot. What would you advise?
So we've put out guidance on this issue. So the statutes call this provision indefinitely confined. And the statutes say if a voter is indefinitely confined for reasons of age, illness, infirmity, or disability, that they can certify that to that, and then they'll receive a absentee ballot for all future elections, and they're not required to file a photo ID. Our belief and understanding of the statute is that that's a self-certification. Each voter is going to have to decide if those circumstances apply to them and if they qualify as indefinitely confined. It is a certification that you have to make on the form. And so it's our belief that that is a provision that, again, each voter has to certify whether or not it applies to them and whether or not they individually qualify for that provision.
And I experienced this over the weekend with a little bit of a dance about getting the witness signature on the absentee ballot envelope. Considering the social distancing, Megan Wolf, does the absentee ballot still require that witness signature on the envelope?
All absentee ballots must be witnessed by a witness that watches the voter mark the ballot. And there's no exceptions in the law for that. And as we've been, talking a lot about in the last week or so, we're an administrative agency. We don't have the ability to change the laws or the requirements of the laws. And so, yes, that law is still in effect. We do have guidance available on our website about ways voters may be able to meet that requirement. So, for example, let's say that you're having someone come bring you supplies or services or medical services, you could leave your certificate envelope outside your door. When they come to deliver things, they could witness you marking your ballot through the window of your door, and they could sign that certificate envelope and leave it outside for the voter to collect and put their ballot within it. We've heard of other solutions where folks may, let's say you live in an apartment and the door to your apartment doesn't have a window, they might leave the envelope again outside or in a place where someone can retrieve it and then Skype or FaceTime or video chat with the person so that they can watch them mark their ballot, and then again leave that signed certificate outside. And so there are alternatives in terms of how to conduct that with a physical barrier between the voters, and we do outline some of that guidance on our website.
Megan Wolf, after the Elections Commission met for nearly 5 hours on Friday, Commissioner Mark Thompson expressed some doubt that the procedures that were agreed upon could produce, in these are his words, a fair, meaningful election and a safe election. How are you addressing his concerns?
So we've produced a lot of health guidance along in coordination with a public health official to go through the processes that a voter uses for voting in an election, as well as polling place procedures as well. And so we've posted that on our website this week. Today we're working on training the clerks around the state how to incorporate those things into their practice. So for example, you'll see that we've produced signage for the polling places. We've also produced a workflow that they can use to ensure that they're sanitizing the hands of voters as they start the process. And then upon leaving the process, we have instructions for poll workers in terms of how they can conduct the process. We also have constructive processes for example, the commission did take a look at the definition in the statutes of a hospitalized elector and have expanded that to allow quarantined voters to utilize that process where an agent can deliver their request materials to the clerk's office and serve as the courier to bring the ballot back to the voter and then back to the clerk's office. And so we do have a lot of guidance available to our local election officials in terms of how they can conduct that process, as well as for voters, so that if they do need to go on election day. So election day can be really important, especially for people who may need access to accessible equipment to be able to ensure that they can vote their ballot independently and secretively. And so, there are provisions that we've put together so that every voter that may need to use one of those options has a way to do so, and that we've recommended a process for them to be able to interact safely.
You've said voters should not have to choose between voting or staying healthy, and it sounds like the Wisconsin Elections Commission is trying to thread that needle. Where are you finding some of the struggles as you go forward here?
Finding enough poll workers to staff election day. So again, we're encouraging everybody to vote an absentee ballot. The deadline to request the ballot is this Thursday for most voters. But that being said, you shouldn't wait. Please, if you want to participate in the election, request your ballot right away because this will ensure that you have time to receive it and time to get it back to your municipal clerk by 8 p.m. on election day. So that's really important.
Megan, I'm sorry, I'm going to have to cut you off there. We will be right back with the administrator of the Wisconsin Elections Commission with time for your calls and questions at 1-800-642-1234 or the email ideas@wpr.org. It's your state capitol report, and I'm Lee Rayburn filling in for Kate Archer Kent. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. Our election day in Wisconsin is still a week from Tuesday, but there is growing concern over the process and the outcome. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn, in for Kate Archer Kent, and this is your State Capitol Report. It's not too late to cast your ballot. As we've heard, it's not even too late to register to vote. The deadline to register in Wisconsin's spring elections has been extended to today. You can do so at myvote.wi.gov. May need to update your address on file with the DMV if you've moved. You can do so at the same website, myvote.wi.gov. If you have an election question for our guest, Megan Wolf, Administrator of the Wisconsin Elections Commission, the phone number is 1-800-642-1234, where we turn to Catherine in Milwaukee. Good morning, Catherine. You're on the Ideas Network.
Good morning. How are you doing today?
Fine, thank you. What's your question?
My question is, why is it that we can't move forward with removing the restrictions that we are placing on absentee voting? I think the legislature needs to reconvene and remove those restrictions, including the voter ID, including the witnessing of the ballot. We need to trust our democracy and allow full participation.
Catherine, thank you. And Megan, you had mentioned before, Wisconsin Elections Commission is an administrative body. They don't get to make the rules. They just have to enforce them.
That's you know, exactly how to put it, is that we're an administrative agency tasked with implementing the law. And so to make any changes to the deadlines, the dates, the procedures that are prescribed in the law would take an act of the legislature, an intervention by the courts, or potentially an order by the governor. So we don't have that type of authority as an administrative agency to make those changes.
The governor on Friday was asking the legislature to mandate an all absentee election before next Tuesday, something Catherine was alluding to in elections potentially for the future. How would our county clerks respond to proposed legislation like that?
So we always are in the feedback and impact sort of statements about changes to the law, and we would certainly do work with our local and municipal partners to understand the impact at the local level as well. But at this time, our focus is really on being able to get support and resources to clerks and voters for the upcoming April 7th election. But we would, of course, work with the legislature and other leadership in the state if there were any proposed changes to the process moving forward.
How many poll workers does it take to run an election?
So in a typical general election, you can see up to 30,000 poll workers around the state. We do estimate that for this April 7th election, there's a lot of consolidation happening because jurisdictions know that there'll be a smaller amount of voters most likely because there's so many absentee requests, and also because they are having difficulty finding enough poll workers to staff their usual amount of polling places. So we estimate that there'll be closer to 2,000 polling places statewide for the April 7th election, and that lessens the amount of poll workers that'll be needed, but it's still probably roughly about 20,000. So another push that we've been making is that if someone is able to serve in that capacity, your municipal clerk would love to hear from you. You can also go to that myvote.wi.gov site and you'll see, I want to become a poll worker. And that's a great way to contact your municipal clerk if you are safely able to assist with serving your community in that capacity.
Megan Wolf is the administrator of the Wisconsin Elections Commission. And how does the shutdown of schools and government buildings affect polling places? You talk about fewer polling places next Tuesday, but how many of the state's polling places do you expect to change?
Quite a few polling places have changed. However, because there are so many institutions that are not currently operating, so like schools, like you mentioned, can actually serve as polling places in a lot of cases more efficiently than they could if school was in session and we were worried about, you know, the mix of students in the public. And so in some cases, there have been facilities that have actually opened up to be used as polling places because they can't be used for their intended purpose day to day. But that's a really great point. Voters, if you do need to utilize the option of going on election day, again, we hope everybody votes by absentee, but there are going to be some folks that need to utilize election day, double check myvote.wi.gov to see if your polling place has changed. That information is kept up to date. And again, you're going to want to check that to make sure that you're headed to the right place for this election.
Megan Wolf is the administrator of the Wisconsin Elections Commission. Oh. And while the CDC is encouraging everyone to practice social distancing, it's worth asking, how does this factor into your plans to vote in the upcoming election? And are you voting in person or absentee? 1-800-642-1234. We go to Diane in Silver Lake. Good morning, Diane.
Good morning. The absentee ballot date is today. It seemed a little confusing when you also mentioned Thursday, so I just wanted to double check.
Hold on there. Let's get it from Megan Wolf. The absentee ballot date is when, Megan?
So the deadline to request an absentee ballot is Thursday, April 2nd. Today is the deadline that was extended by the courts to register to vote, but the deadline to request an absentee ballot is Thursday, April 2nd.
Okay, Diane, did you get that?
I did. Okay, I was on the website last night, and it didn't say that.
Okay.
Great. Good to know. And then also, I tried several times on my computer to register, and it didn't go forward and move. The only way I could do it was on my smartphone. So, unfortunately, if you don't have a smartphone, I don't know what I would have done.
Sure. So the desktop version does work, and we've seen hundreds and thousands of registrations come through. If you have an outdated browser, so like any website, you know, it's difficult for us to support every single version of every browser, but we do support the desktop version, and we see thousands of applications come through daily, as well as the mobile version.
Thank you for the call, Diane. And on Wednesday of last week, Wisconsin Rapids Mayor Zach Vruwink appeared on here on the morning show and raised some concerns about access to technology during this election.
There's over 3,000 local elected officials who are currently trying to access the statewide voter registration system, which, if you can imagine, the bottleneck on our tech infrastructure, particularly in those rural communities where the internet connection and broadband is not as great as it is in places like Wisconsin Rapids. We're trying to respond to those concerns on a regular basis.
How's the voter registration website holding up, Megan?
So it is taking around-the-clock monitoring. So our staff has literally been working around the clock, as I'm sure our local partners as well, to make sure that we're increasing capacity, that we're keeping everything going in a way that can handle traffic that we had never in our wildest dreams imagined would be happening on both our website and our statewide database. And so everything is working well. There are lags from time to time in the statewide database that the clerks are working in. We haven't experienced any issues with our website or any widespread issues with our database. And so honestly, it's quite remarkable given that we have never, you know, designed our system to quite handle a situation like we're seeing today. But we're doing everything we can to keep those systems operating in a way that doesn't impact the user's experience.
Tom and Madison, you're on the Ideas Network with Megan Wolf, the administrator of the Wisconsin Elections Commission.
Good morning, Lee and Megan. I would like to propose something really very different entirely, and that is that all Wisconsin elections move exclusively to an online format, and you can still go to a polling place if you want, but we should be able to vote on every single issue, whether it's an individual candidate or a legislative proposal. On our own, we don't need this expensive and contentious so-called democracy that the parties try to impose on us. Let us make the decisions ourselves. We should be running our state on popular referendums on any given issue on any given day.
Direct democracy, Tom. The feasibility, Megan, since the administrator, since the legislation would have to come from another place in the state. What about the feasibility of online elections?
So right now, you know, usually if we weren't in the process of preparing locals for this pandemic and voters for what's happening right now, cybersecurity would be one of our very main focuses in technology. And, you know, as we've heard from experts around the country, the technology just isn't there yet in terms of being able to hold online elections. There would also be very significant law changes that would be needed to be made to make that possible. But, you know, I don't think that the technology is there yet to move our elections all online. There's still a really important human element to the process.
Chris in Port Wing, you're on the Ideas Network this morning. We're running out of time. I apologize.
That's okay. Well, I wanted to make sure I could vote, so I got a hold of my clerk. My clerk, we're rural, so my clerk was worried that the mail would not get me the ballot in time for me to complete it and get it back to him on time. I mean, the mail goes over to Minneapolis to get to Port Wing and back. And so he suggested I just come over. So I went over to his office, and we got the absentee ballot in person, but we had to do some kind of funny social distancing to make that safe. So what about people that are rural and have to be concerned about getting the mail ballot in on time, you know, because they have to get it and complete it and get it back?
Megan, we've got about 30 seconds.
Sure. That's a great point. And you can contact your municipal clerk to set up an appointment to vote absentee in person. So that's another option. And you can go to that myvote.wi.gov to find your clerk and to do all of the things that we talked about today.
Megan Wolf, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having me.
Megan Wolf is the administrator of the Wisconsin Elections Commission. Up next is news, then the state capitol report continues, and we learn more about Marcy's Law, a law intended to expand rights of victims of violence. We speak with an advocate against violence who supports the law and an attorney who is against the referendum. I'm Lee Rayburn, filling in for Kate Archer Kent, and it's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. Henry Nicholas is the billionaire co-founder of the tech company Broadcom. In California in 1983, Henry Nicholas's sister Marcy was shot and killed by her ex-boyfriend. Henry Nicholas went on to launch and fund a nationwide effort to expand the rights of victims in honor of his sister. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn, filling in for Kate Archer Kent. And in Wisconsin, Marcy's Law is on the spring ballot as question one, a proposition to amend the state constitution. Do you have any questions about question one? 1-800-642-1234. You can always email us, ideas@WPR.org, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. It's your state capitol report, and we have arguments this half hour, both for and against the proposed amendment. Joining us this morning, Asma Kadri Keeler, who is a staff attorney with the American Civil Liberties Union in Wisconsin. Asma, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being here. And Veronica Figueroa-Velez is the executive director of UNIDOS, a statewide nonprofit that provides advocacy and support to victims of domestic violence, sexual assault, and human trafficking. Veronica, thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for having me.
Veronica, and I will begin with you this morning. What are the specifics of this ballot initiative? What exactly are we voting on?
We're voting to protect victims' rights, but also to level the playing field between victims and accusers. I know there's a lot of information out there talking about Marcy's Law as a bad thing in terms of not validating or accounting for accusers' rights, and that's absolutely not correct. If you read at the amendment, there is on this section, on the last section on the amendment, it's very clear that it's not intended to interpret any of this to not have the rights of the accuser or the constitutional rights of the accuser be heard. So that doesn't change. There's nothing in Marcy's Law that prevents the accuser from continue to have its rights. We just want victims and survivors of crimes to be able to have a better stance in court, to be able to defend themselves, to be able to have what they don't have right now. I sit with victims in court every single day. I am with victims all the time trying to prepare them for court, trying to prepare them to be able to get their voice heard. And if you are in there with on the other side of the equation, when victims don't have attorneys, for example, when the persecutor is supporting the survivors and the other side has all the potential, all the financial means to have an attorney, the voices of victims don't get heard loud and clear. So Marcy's Law is not intended to allow the victims to have greater or lower. It's about having equal rights for victims as we have for accusers. From the standpoint of the organization or the standpoint of the work that we do, having the opportunity to provide victims with the information and the preparation that they need to go out in court and defend themselves is crucial. Through this pandemic, right now, we continue to see victims' rights strip from them because of the systems that have been put in place to protect people from a pandemic. And I've seen it. I spent all weekend working with a survivor of domestic violence who was displaced from her home.
I'm very interested in that, and I've certainly been thinking about that, of unsafe home environments at a time of self-isolation, and we'll get to that, Veronica. I appreciate it, but I also want to touch base with Ozma here from the ACLU of Wisconsin and find out how they see Marcy's Law. How would you explain it, Ozma?
Yeah, so I want to start by making it crystal clear that the ACLU strongly supports victims' rights, and we do believe that the Wisconsin Victims' Rights Statute covers what Marcy's Law is seeking to cover. And just to quickly sort of respond to what Veronica was saying, you know, I don't think that we would say that victims should be held to any less esteem in the justice system. But I think it's worth noting that the rights of the accused were enshrined in the federal constitution and each state constitution, because we as a society recognize that the government has an enormous amount of power and the ability to strip any person in this country of life, liberty, and property for any reason at any time. And constitutional rights create a check on that power. The rights of victims, on the other hand, were not enshrined in constitutions, whether federal or state, but rather state law, because we recognize that victims deserve protection. But that protection is from another individual, not the state, with all of its resources and all of its power. So 40 years ago, Wisconsin recognized that there is and should be an inherent difference between the position of the victim and the accused in the criminal system. So here I would encourage the public to focus on the fact that Wisconsin's current victims' rights law offers each and every one of the protections that Marcy's Law is proposing, and with an enforcement mechanism. When you put in a constitutional amendment to your state or federal constitution, what you then have to contend with is how are you going to enforce it? And I hear a lot, not just from the Marcy's Law campaign, but from many victims' rights advocates, that the difficulty that exists in the current system for victims not being heard is a lack of enforcement. It's not that the rights don't exist. And to that end, I'll make one final point is, you know, there is a really troubling aspect here about the presumption of innocence. And I think Veronica's right. In Marcy's Law, there is one or two sentences towards the end of the full text of the law that says, you know, none of this shall undermine the right to be accused or something like that. But I think it's really important to point out that you can have something in terms of language mean one thing on its face and one thing as applied. The opening directive of Marcy's Law states that victims shall be entitled to all of the following rights, which shall vest at the time of victimization. Off of the bat, that raises a question. The time of victimization, what does that mean? That there removes the presumption of innocence and imposes a presumption of guilt on somebody accused of a crime, because one of the very purposes of our court system is to help determine who the perpetrator of a crime might be. If a victim can enforce a right, any one of them under Marcy's Law, from the moment a crime is committed against them by the person they believe committed the crime, our court system has no function in protecting against the truly innocent. And that's our concern with the presumption of innocence.
Ozma Qadri-Keeler is an ACLU staff attorney, and Veronica Figueroa-Velez, an advocate against domestic violence, sexual assault, and human trafficking. Are you or someone you know a victim of domestic violence or sexual assault? Do you file a report or press charges against your assaulter? And if so, why or why not? Take your calls at 1-800-642-1234, talking about question one on the ballot for the spring election, known as Marcy's Law nationwide. And we'll go to Jenny in Madison. Jenny, you're on the Ideas Network. Good morning. Sorry we lost you there. I do have a comment here from Steve from Stoughton. Couldn't stay with us. He wants to know, have all the states adopted Marcy's Law with the same language as Wisconsin? Ozma, you want to handle that?
Sure. The answer is no. To my knowledge, I think it has been passed in 11 states. Perhaps there are more coming up on spring ballot initiatives that we're not aware of. And the language is roughly the same. There are some, I think, tweaks that have been made state by state to contend with their current existing versions of victims' rights in those respective states. So for Wisconsin, for example, our version of Marcy's Law tracks almost identically what the victims' rights law is in our Wisconsin state statute.
Which brings up the question for Veronica then. Veronica, why do you think Marcy's Law deserves to be? Why does Unidos think Marcy's Law should be in our Constitution and not just part of our state statutes?
Can I answer actually real quick also the question? Marcy's Law, I want to point out that Marcy's Law was done in Wisconsin, by Wisconsin, for Wisconsin. Many people that work with victims, survivors, many organizations are really supporting Marcy's Law and were part of the input and the feedback to create this amendment. It's not the same from state to state. Every state has a different law regarding to victims' rights. And the Wisconsin Marcy's Law amendment, it's absolutely not the same as others.
Why the Constitution?
For us, the Constitution is that we do need to have, we need to be able to have rights for survivors, especially when we're talking about victims of color, that allow us to level the playing field, that allow us to support survivors at a higher level than when we're able to support survivors at this time. And yes, there are rights like the attorney mentioned that are exactly the same that are on this amendment. And yes, there is a problem of reinforcing those things. But by having this amendment on the ballot and having it vote as yes and having it for us to be able to enforce it as advocates, as our duty to support and protect victims of crimes, we are actually getting a tool that would allow us to support survivors at a higher and greater scale than right now we don't have, because it's a matter of the law versus what we say in terms of what we're seeing survivors having to deal with in court.
How is Marcy's Law different than the Crime Victim Bill of Rights already in our state statutes, Veronica?
Again, I think what we're trying to do here with Marcy's Law, what we're trying to do here with Marcy's Law, it's really to elevate the rights that we already have under the statute and supporting survivors at the same level that we are supporting those who are guilty, innocent until guilty.
I understood, Veronica. And Ozma, briefly, we've got about 30 seconds here. Why not put Marcy's Law in the Constitution?
We think that the Crime Victims Bill of Rights statute is sufficient to protect victims the way that we believe is necessary and the way that they are seeking, because statutes are flexible. We have the ability to amend and change them. We can approach our legislators. We can present our interests, and you can build in enforcement mechanisms, right? All judges in every state and at the federal level are all required to follow laws. The Constitution, on the other hand, you need specific enforcement mechanisms to make it work. That's why constitutional law is so complicated.
Ozma Kadri-Keeler cutting you off, and I apologize. Staff attorney with the ACLU of Wisconsin, Veronica Figueroa-Velez, executive director of Unidos, and our conversation about Marcy's Law, question one on the spring ballot in Wisconsin, continues in your state capitol report. I'm Lee Rayburn, filling in for Kate Archer-Kent on The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. If approved, question one on Wisconsin's spring ballot would amend the state constitution to permanently mandate rights for crime victims. Victims would have the right to be heard at a plea, parole, or revocation proceeding. They'd have the right to refuse defense attorneys' interviews, depositions, and discovery requests. And victims would hold the right to attend all proceedings in their case. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn, filling in for Kate Archer-Kent, and this is your State Capitol Report. Our guests are here to represent both sides of this debate, and we are grateful for their perspective. Is there a line when it comes to victims' rights? Is there a line where the legislature encroaches too far in the proceedings of the judiciary? We're taking your questions and opinions on Marcy's Law, Question 1, on our spring ballot at 1-800-642-1234. Our guests, Veronica Figueroa-Velez, from Executive Director of UNIDOS, and Asma Kadri Keeler, who is a staff attorney with the ACLU of Wisconsin. Let's go to the phones now, and Bob and Madison, you're on the Ideas Network. What do you think of Question 1?
Hello, thank you. I'm a prosecutor in Wisconsin who has been in support of the Marcy's Law, as has been the last two attorneys general. And just to answer a couple of the points that the ACLU attorney makes, who's very articulate and seems very concerned about our situation here, but she doesn't practice criminal law. She practices civil law. And in the practice of criminal law in Wisconsin, there's a couple of important things to keep in mind about the present amendment. The amendment as it exists since 1993 makes no provision for the rights of the victim to take precedence over any rights of the defendant or even to be equal to them, whereas Marcy's Law requires that victim rights be considered as a constitutional right and in the face of any right except those of the defendant's federal constitutional rights, so they're protected. She just made a remark that the judges have to follow the law, but the fact is that a recent opinion from the Wisconsin Supreme Court made it clear that that the victim's rights to appear and be heard at a proceeding could not be enforced against the judge because of the statute. And once it's a constitutional amendment, it will be able to be enforced against the judge. And finally, that just to make another point, that the passing of a constitutional amendment such as Marcy's Law is different in every state. And in Wisconsin, the Wisconsin Marcy's Law was written and drafted by people involved with prosecution, with defense, and with victims' rights in the state of Wisconsin. It is written for and about Wisconsin, and the provision that evidences that is the provision that makes clear that any law that's passed in Wisconsin or any court opinion in Wisconsin which gives a defendant a greater right than any federal constitutional right is one that would fly in the face of this constitutional amendment if it's passed and made law. And that's an answer to a period of time in the Wisconsin Supreme Court when the Wisconsin Supreme Court was consistently attempting to give rights to defendants.
Bob, I want to give Asma a chance to answer the issues. Bob, a prosecutor in Madison, supportive of Question 1 and Marcy's Law. Asma, what do you think?
Yeah, you know, I have heard that before a couple of times now, and there's no denying that there are many folks who are in support of this constitutional amendment, many of them involved in the criminal legal system. But I do think that there are some fallacies that were raised in that comment. In particular, you know, I think it's really important to look at other states that have passed Marcy's Law to see what it might play out like here in Wisconsin. Every version of Marcy's Law that has been passed in other states has been tailored to that specific state. So let's take Ohio, for example. We learned from Ohio prosecutors that they were interpreting Marcy's Law, and rightfully so, because it says it in the amendment, to withhold discovery from a criminal trial. This comes into direct conflict with the rights of the accused. And yes, I do not practice criminal law. I practice civil law, but I'm in the business of protecting people's constitutional rights. And that's what we do, right? We protect the rights of the accused because it's a constitutional right.
You said that Ohio had interpreted their version of this law to withhold evidence?
Exactly. That's exactly right.
Is that a one-off event, or is that practice?
We don't know, and we don't know how they will continue to interpret it. Another great example of how this can go wrong, because it's vague and because there are no strict provisions on how it's to be enforced and interpreted, again, arises from Ohio. There was a man who called 911 who had schizophrenia. He reported an active shooter near his home. When the police arrived and they didn't find a shooter, they subsequently charged the man with misusing the 911 system. As a result of that charge and conviction, the city of Centerville in Ohio claimed victim status under Marcy's Law and ordered the man to pay $1,375 to the city to cover the cost of responding to the call. So setting aside the fact that the man genuinely believed he was in danger when he called 911, why would a city then charge a citizen for calling 911? The natural consequence of that decision is that people will be deterred from calling emergency services to report crime, and the offense could trigger a municipal restitution claim, which is what Marcy's Law would provide for. So if the ultimate goal of Marcy's Law is to make people safer, we would not support that type of outcome. But that's what's happening in Ohio. They're going through active litigation on that issue right now to figure out whether that...
Bob mentioned that each state is different, but it's an interesting case study. I want to get another call in here. Trish in Madison, you're on the Ideas Network. Good morning. Trish, you have your radio on?
Hi there.
Hi.
I do. Thank you. I'm really concerned about reports that I'm hearing from all over the world. And I know that with this pandemic, we are lagging behind some of these other countries. But there are systems where victims can't even call in because the systems are so full and so bogged down with extreme fast increases in domestic violence, for example, in France and other countries as well. And we're starting to see it here now, too. And I saw a report on CNN about it last night. How can we do something immediately to raise awareness about this so that our own capacity to handle this and then make the language of our pending amendment match the need that this pandemic is creating that is fairly urgent?
Trish, it's a great question, and I'm glad you brought it up. Veronica, as Executive Director of UNIDOS, what are you seeing? Veronica? Did we lose Veronica?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah,
Hello?
There you are. Hi, did you hear Trisha's call there?
I had a little bit of a hard time hearing her voice through a cell phone, but right now, with this term pandemic, we are seeing exactly that, people not being answered to faster, people leaving voice messages, people trying to contact for help and not getting the help immediately because of many fears that this pandemic has brought to all of us who are responding to a crisis.
Specifically right now, domestic violence and sexual assault and what UNIDOS does mm-hmm. every day. And you had mentioned earlier, Veronica, that Marcy's Law is important for communities of color. Could you explain a little bit about why this you see the connection there between question one on the ballot and communities of color across Wisconsin?
I would say as a Latina myself, and what we see, again, when we go to court and support clients, is that people of color has lesser of a voice, unfortunately. And we see this in many other instances, not only in domestic violence and sexual assault situations, but in many other across the whole victim of crimes definition. So for us, we see that imbalance constantly, especially when race plays a role in victimization, when you're a person of color versus a person that is not a person of color. So for us, really having the requirements, especially she mentioned earlier that that there's many of the things in Marcy's Law or many of the victims' rights are already in place. But this would allow us to require the remedies. Judges have to develop a remedy for rights for the victims who have been violated. So I think that for us, it's very important that we don't, that we stay on task to truly assist victims of any type in really putting their voice out there. And yes, right now victims can go if they feel that they're not being heard, can go to the proceedings. But this will give us an opportunity for victims to be part of the entire process, not just a specific parts of the process.
And I apologize that we're out of time. Veronica Figueroa-Velez, Executive Director of UNIDOS, thank you so much for joining us this morning. Asma Kadri Keeler, Staff Attorney with the American Civil Liberties Union of Wisconsin, taking a look at question one on the ballot, Wisconsin's version of Marcy's Law. It's your State Capitol Report. I'm Lee Rayburn, filling in for Kate Archer-Kent, and you are listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.